There are students in our local schools who are dealing with more than passing tests, behaving in class, or getting picked for a sports team. They also have to worry about where they'll sleep each night. Homelessness in Florida schools. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at BayCareEvents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Robin Sussingham. Carson Cooper is off today. Thanks for joining us. When it comes to children, the federal government's definition of homeless includes more people than you may think. Those who lack a fixed, regular, and adequate nighttime residence are considered homeless. That means children who are living in motels, trailer parks, or campgrounds, or doubled up with relatives or friends, as well as those who stay in shelters, on the street, or in abandoned buildings. For the 2013-2014 school year, Florida Public Schools identified 71,446 students who were homeless. When the school year ends, of course, the problems don't go away. Groups that work with homeless families say summer means an increase in need. Florida Matters reporter Michael S. Butler has more.
Good afternoon. Thank you for calling 211 Tampa Bay Cares. This is Nancy.
It's early in the day at a Pinellas County Crisis Center, and the phones are already beginning to light up.
The peak time at 211 across the board is the summer due to many trends.
That's Mickey Thompson. She's the executive director at the Crisis Hotline in Clearwater. It's a referral service for families and individuals who are facing the possibility of homelessness.
When kids are out of school, those who are on free and reduced lunch in the school are now home. So you can imagine your electric bill goes up because people are home, water bill goes up. So a lot goes up during the summer, and it's warm here in Florida during the summer. So there are more calls to 211 in the summer for need and help.
About a dozen kids are playing in a large room at the Homeless Empowerment Program, or HEP, in Pinellas County. Most are busy gluing plastic bottle caps into different shapes to make art. There are boys and girls. All are between the ages of about 6 to 12. Noah Holmes is 12. His family is now staying at HEP, and he remembers the hotel, the last place where he stayed with his mom and little sister. And he can describe it in just one word.
Bad. You can't go at least 10 feet without smelling weed or pot or something. Just the place was bad.
Michelle Holmes is mother to Noah and 7-year-old Emma. The family was evicted from their apartment not long after she lost her job. Her pastor recommended she call HEP. When we talked, they had only been at the shelter for about a week.
Without this, like I said, I don't know where we'd be. I don't know. Like, I don't want to say ever living on the streets, but that may have been our next step.
Holmes says she's noticed a difference in Noah since their housing worries started.
With Noah, his demeanor has changed a little bit. He's very pouty and quieter. I definitely think it affects them at school. They're like, I don't think they know how to express what to tell everyone.
A study from the American Psychological Association says as schooling for homeless children is interrupted or delayed, they are twice as likely to have a learning disability, have to repeat a grade, or to be suspended from school. Michelle Holmes says the Pinellas County school system knows that the family is staying at HEP.
And they're very supportive of like the situation if we were late. Because getting her on the bus, she missed a couple days because they were getting her a bus from the hotel, and they really worked with her well.
So how many students like Noah and Emma are there? Well, the exact number is hard to determine. According to 211 Tampa Bay Cares, there were around 2,200 homeless students in Pinellas County. The term homeless students has a broader definition than you may think. It includes students who are living in trailer parks, hotels, or with extended family. And it can be difficult to get an accurate count of homeless students, especially as they get older when they start to couch surf or move around a lot. Across the bay, Ken Gaughan supervises social work for Hillsborough County Public Schools.
We've also been talking to other communities and kind of experts in the field about what should our number be? Now, what does it look like?
He says they've been trying to figure out how many homeless students they may have.
And the input we get is you need to look at your free lunch count in the district. And our free lunch count is pretty high. It's around 55%. They say about 10% of your free lunch population is also homeless. That's a pretty big number.
Doing the math, that means about 11,000 students in Hillsborough County may be at or near homeless.
Well, what are you making out of your bottle caps?
A cake.
Meanwhile, Noah Holmes says he's just glad his family's together at the Homeless Empowerment Program, and he hopes it means a fresh start for all of them.
I don't know, it helps my family get back on our feet instead of just keep falling and falling. So you just move up from where we used to be.
His mom is going through a 6-week computer training class at HEP that she hopes will improve her chances at finding a good job and a permanent home of their own. For Florida Matters, I'm Michael S. Butler.
So hearing the sadness there in Noah's voice in Michael's report, that's tough. But there is hope. The good news is that homelessness in Florida overall is way down. And although the homeless student population is still on the rise, it's starting to level off. The Florida Council on Homelessness credits strong community participation as being key to getting families into their own homes. We have representatives of those community organizations that are making a real difference here with us. Zach White is the Senior Director of Programs for the Homeless Empowerment Program in Clearwater. Thanks for being here, Zach.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So, Zach, we heard our reporter speaking to 12-year-old Noah and his mother at the HEP campus. What typically happens to families that they slip into homelessness?
What might contribute to a family's homelessness could be a variety of things. You know, it could be economic downturn, loss of income, employment. It could be disability, substance abuse issues, broken homes. It could be a multitude of factors.
Jamie Meyer is also here in the studio with us. Jamie's the Senior Director of Education Services and Programs for Metropolitan Ministries in Tampa. Thanks for joining us, Jamie.
Thank you for having me.
So does Metropolitan Ministries provide schooling to the kids that are in your shelter or your transitional living spaces?
Yes, we have both a preschool and Head Start on site. And we also have a partnership school with the district that serves community students, as well as a school of choice for the families that are living with us that are experiencing homelessness.
Okay, we're going to talk about that a little more later on. Joining us from our Sarasota studio, Ellen McLaughlin is the Director of Homeless Education and the Schoolhouse Link Program at the Sarasota Y. Welcome, Ellen.
Thank you for having me.
Ellen, how big a problem is the issue of homeless students in Sarasota?
Each year we have about 1,000 homeless students identified. Those are children that are in grades K through 12. We have probably double that number that are under the age of 5, and then a pretty significant undercount, too. Many homeless kids and families are reluctant to share their situation. So there's a lot of families out there that don't say anything and don't access the help they need.
Right. So, Ellen, talk about how teachers and school personnel identify those homeless kids. You've got some fascinating literature on your website, such as a listing the 10 things that school secretaries can do for homeless students. Talk about that.
We do a lot of training of school registrars and guidance counselors and social workers and nurses and bus drivers to help them realize that homelessness is much more than what they might think. We look at different warning signs, maybe changing schools frequently, showing up at a school without the regular transcripts or birth certificates. When families are homeless, usually paper all ends up in a bag in a trunk or maybe gets lost. So looking at things like lack of documentation, lack of proof of where they live, changing many schools, and being behind in school. So we want people to raise their consciousness about homelessness and realize many families and children are in transition.
And are you finding that the school personnel is receptive? I'm just thinking about our personal experiences. To register in a public school, you have to bring proof that you're living in that school zone. A lot of times those secretaries can be pretty intimidating if you don't have all of your documents in order. So what are you telling the people at the schools?
We tell them they're the gatekeeper. They're the ones that need to be aware to get these kids in school, because the best place for a homeless kid to be is in a school. They have safety. They have stability. They can make progress to their goals. So most registrars are very receptive to that message, and the federal law allows kids that are homeless to be enrolled without these things.
Jamie with Metropolitan Ministries, can you give us a story of a family that would be representative of what happens to these kids?
Sure. Well, you know, we've got every extreme. We've got students that by some miracle have maintained pretty regular enrollment and have maintained their academics through the crisis and through the trauma. And but we have many, many more who have had a number of gaps in their education. We've had we've had second graders who have been in nine schools by the time they're in second grade. And often those nine schools don't come in rapid succession. When we go back, we have a team of staff and volunteer support who help our children get enrolled in school. So we help them track back to get their records in place. Under McKinney-Vento, as was mentioned, the students have a right to immediate enrollment, whether or not they have all that documentation in place. But it's important that they get that documentation in place. So it's a bit of a treasure hunt at times to go back. Students have often moved county to county, state to state, and we have to work with the family to help track those records down so we can meet the student where they are and enroll them going forward. And so I can think of a particular student that had those gaps in their education before coming to us. But then once they got enrolled, they not only stayed throughout the length of our program, which was about a year, but because of the school district support and offering ongoing transportation, that student was able to stay with us for several more years.
And How old was that student when they came to you?
The family had a number of children, and the particular student that I'm thinking about was a first grade student at the time. Had many moves, many absences.
And why had they had so many moves?
Lots of instability with employment and instability within the family situation. And the family had several children. They had five children. Mm-hmm. We had their younger siblings were in our preschool and were safe and were educated there. We had a first grader, and then she had an older sibling as well. They all came into our system. And then through the ongoing enrollment support, that student just completed fifth grade with us, and she's now moving on to middle school very, very successfully and in the gifted program. So it was an amazing turnaround for her and for her entire family.
Zach, you're with the Homeless Empowerment Program in Pinellas. Do you get to know the individual kids and families that come in?
Oftentimes we do, and very much so for our frontline caseworkers and you know, other support staff that are available to help these families help themselves and lean towards self-sufficiency and independence in the community.
I asked you before how someone ended up being homeless, how a family would fall into homelessness, and you gave me several examples of why that would happen. But I'm just wondering if there's a pattern. Is there something that you see a lot that's happening to these families, especially in the last, say, 5 years, that's causing them to end up in the shelter?
Well, we're seeing interesting correlations in the rise of families and as a segment of the homeless population. I really think it's just a general series of things that are taking place that, you know, is mainly attributable to finances, financial situations, employment, and the opportunities that these families have to sustain themselves and the opportunities they have to move forward. You know, we're seeing a lot of displacement throughout this community, and I think the basics just come down to opportunities and housing opportunities and just...
Well, let me ask you about that, because obviously after we had the housing crash, housing prices came down quite a bit, and you would think that that would be an opportunity for more affordable housing from when housing prices were at their peak. I'm wondering why we've seen the opposite, why we've seen families displaced rather than finding cheaper houses. Is it because rental prices have gone up? What do you think has happened?
I think that has a lot to do with it, in addition to the barriers that these families experience in accessing housing opportunities due to criminal backgrounds or eviction histories or just not having the financial availability to put down the first last months and the deposit and all of that. You know, we work with our community resources to provide those funding opportunities and those supports to ensure their sustainability. But without organizations like HEP and the other agencies involved in this continuum, it's not something that a lot of these families are able to overcome themselves.
So it sounds like, what to sum up, what you're talking about, a chaotic home situation that's due to a lot of things.
Sure, and it can be, very much so. You know, working with a lot of veterans, families, and just a larger families, you know, more kids in the household obviously is going to breed additional challenges for families who are striving to make ends meet, even if they are working full-time. You know, you touched on the affordability of housing in this area, and it's simply it's a huge problem.
We see the same thing in Sarasota. Housing here, since the recession, rental prices have significantly increased, maybe $300 or $400 increase for a two-bedroom. So now a two-bedroom is renting for $900 or $1,000 or $1,100, and you used to find the same unit for $700. So families are, you know, not able to afford housing. One little thing happens, a child is sick, mom misses work, or the car breaks down, and they find themselves homeless again.
Ellen, do teachers make accommodations when they know students are homeless?
Well, we talked to schools about the rights of homeless kids and having a child stay in one school all year. I think that's critical. In the federal law, the McKinney-Vento Act says that even if a child moves 10 times and in and out of the county and in and out of the school district, they have the right to stay in one school all year with transportation provided by the school district. So we train teachers that these are their kids. To be successful, they need to have stability, and the teachers really embrace that and, you know, have them a sense of belonging in the classroom. They do need to understand that it's hard to do your homework when you're in a shelter or in a car, and they need to make certain places in the school where the kids can get extra help or do their homework in quiet.
And, Jamie, I imagine if they're having a hard time affording rent, having a car or even affording public transportation might be a problem.
Transportation is a major barrier. It's a barrier, of course, when we work through the school system, we can usually get the student transportation to maintain their school of origin whenever feasible. But the parents don't always have ready access to the school. And we know how important, how critical parent involvement is in a student's success. And so we work with our families that we're serving both in our residential programs as well as in the community to help alleviate some of those transportation barriers by providing transportation, by providing bus passes, because we want families to be able to access their student's school. We want them to be able to go to parent-teacher conferences. We want them to be able to go to activities. And
do you find that the parents want to be involved?
It depends. I think when they're at crisis level, whether it's a matter of they want to or not, they just can't find a way always to balance it. But once we alleviate the crisis and they're in a safe place and they know their little ones, for example, their little, you know, infants and toddlers are taken care of, they absolutely have a desire to be involved in their children's education. And they just need support to do that. And they need to build a positive relationship with the school so that the school is not so intimidating to them.
Coming up,
Sarasota is a very wealthy community. It's a beautiful place to live, but half of the kids in our school district are on free and reduced lunch. Poverty is a growing problem.
I'm Robin Sessingham. This is Florida Matters. This is Florida Matters. I'm Robin Sessingham, sitting in for Carson Cooper. Our guests are Jamie Meyer with Metropolitan Ministries in Tampa, Zach White of the Homeless Empowerment Program in Clearwater, and Ellen McLaughlin of the Sarasota Y. From the Metropolitan Ministries website, one of the things it says is that while some of the families you serve simply need to find affordable housing, many need intensive counseling to overcome the trauma associated with homelessness. Can you explain what you mean by the trauma of homelessness?
Sure. Well, often there were multiple traumas that led to homelessness. So whether it's domestic violence, drug and alcohol addictions, a family history of trauma and violence. So there are traumas that led to the homelessness, and then homelessness itself is traumatic. It's traumatic for the parents. I mean, it's certainly very traumatic for children of any age to go through the losing their home.
And how does that manifest itself?
It manifests itself in with the children in a real lack of trust because they haven't had a predictable situation. They've come home one day and their bags have all been packed and out the door they go. We've had students who have had major triggers, for example, in our after-school program, and we later unpacked with the family that the after-school program at their previous school was the place where mom came and plucked the kids up and they left dad for good and never saw dad again. So we start to see those things replayed in a situation that may seem like a normal, fun, you know, happy-go-lucky kind of situation, and we're not understanding why this child's having such difficulty, and it's because they've experienced significant trauma.
You're doing a lot more than math tutoring, in other words.
There's
a lot more that goes on. Zach, the Homeless Empowerment Program says their motivation is to make sure this is the last time families have to stay in a shelter. What's the biggest thing that you all do to break that cycle of homelessness?
Well, that's correct, and I think the approach that we find most successful is the comprehensiveness of the supports and services that we have to provide. You know, we're working not only with these families, these heads of households, to put this homelessness behind them and really instill the values that they'll need to carry forward and maintain their independence, but it's even more important to instill that in the children. And so, you know, the silver lining to some of these horrible scenarios that we've become so intimately familiar with is just the abundance of resources and supports that we have to provide these children and families while they're within the programs. And, you know, these children, ultimately, we get them through these programs, summer enrichment programs. We have a learning center. We're in partnership with our club. These children have year-round opportunities that they might not otherwise experience. And I think they come out much, much better on the other side.
Ellen, I wanted to hear a little bit more about how schools are dealing with the educational aspects of homelessness. It's too complicated possibly for a public school to try and help the students' housing status. But how do they try to make sure that they're learning even though they're homeless?
Every school district is required by the McKinney-Vento Act to have a homeless liaison. In Sarasota, we actually have a small team that works with homeless families. There's four of us. So there's one person that works with the youth, and then two people that work with family, and I do a lot of community development because it's not all about the schools. It's about community partners involved, too, to provide shelter or work opportunities or case management services. So there's, in Sarasota, the school board actually contracts with the Y to be their homeless liaison.
I've got to tell you, Ellen, I was surprised to hear that there was this program in Sarasota. You do not think of homelessness when you think of Sarasota. You think of affluence.
Sarasota is a very wealthy community. It's a beautiful place to live. But half of the kids in our school district are on free and reduced lunch. Poverty is a growing problem, and affordability of housing is a really big issue here. So, you know, our school district, like every school district, has services for homeless kids. We're just lucky to have community partners to help fill the gaps and really make a difference for our homeless families and youth.
Zach, how many parents are you working with that are employed but they're still having trouble finding housing?
The number varies, truly. You know, we in our ability to house 24 families at capacity, these families are different walks of life.
I guess what I'm wondering is it possible that some of these parents have jobs, but they've still lost housing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. A lot of families are working and still struggling. So, you know, many times it's a temporary situation for them. And with their engagement, dialogue, and presumably the built trust that we can establish throughout the time that they were with us, you know, we can make significant strides in getting them the assistance they need. And for oftentimes, once a family is able to secure housing in the community with established resources and supports behind them, they're going to stay stably housed and independent. And that's what we're seeing a lot in our family housing program that we've sustained for several years now at HEP. We will house the families for 90 days at no charge to them, work with them on all the things we need to work on. Then once we get them established in the community, we follow them for up to a year, and we've had very, very little recidivism towards homelessness.
What changes do you all see in the summer as opposed to the school year with the students? They're not possibly getting regular meals, the free lunch that they have during the school year. Are you seeing a greater need during the summer? Ellen, do you want to answer that?
Well, the problem is more visible during the school year. We have staff members that do outreach all the time. but it is much easier to find homeless kids during the school year when they're sitting at a desk in our classroom. So there's definitely unmet needs during the summer. The shelters are very busy, and you know, kids and families are struggling to get their needs met.
And we definitely see an increase over the summer in our outreach programs and in our meal programs around the greater Four County community. With families that do have more need in the summer, their dollars are getting stretched even thinner, so they'll come in to shop to get groceries in our outreach centers, and then we'll also tend to see more families in some of our hot meal sites that typically during the school year are serving more of the single homeless population.
I'm going to address this to all three of you. What can people do who are listening to this program and want to help in some way? Just make of course you can make a financial contribution to any of your programs. Is there anything that we should be watching out for, though, in the youth that we see around us?
You know, I think that we can do a lot of small things that make big impacts, and it doesn't always have to be money. The Y in Sarasota has a mentoring program that matches a volunteer up with a student, and they meet once a week in the school during the school year and in some places over the summer. And having a caring adult in your life really makes a huge difference for kids. So that's a way to be involved and have a personal connection and really touch somebody's life.
Are there any warning signs that we should be alert for, say, in the friends of our children? Are there things that we should be on the lookout for?
I would say any sort of changes in behavior, kids getting more secretive about what's happening at home. You often see kids hoarding food and that sort of thing. Like we might have an opportunity in one of our programs to give snacks and they want to take extras. You might see that even in a home situation or in a summer camp situation out in the community.
And we have links to all of the organizations represented here today on our website, WUSFnews.org. You can click on those links. You can find out a lot more information about these different organizations. I want to thank our guest today, Jamie Meyer, the Senior Director of Education Services and Programs for Metropolitan Ministries in Tampa, Zach White, the Senior Director of Programs for the Homeless Empowerment Program in Clearwater, and Ellen McLaughlin, the Director of Homeless Education and the Schoolhouse Link Program at the Sarasota Y. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's it for today's show. Florida Matters is produced by Lottie Watts, engineered by Craig George and Mark Hayes, and is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Robin Sussingham, sitting in for Carson Cooper. Thanks for listening.